execution from what happened to well done, chapter 7. Sometimes, even when all the right elements are in place, things can go awry. It can be a befuddling and heartbreaking moment. Everyone seems so pumped up at the meeting. Everyone seems so committed. But when it comes time to report the results of their efforts, nothing emerges. The initial exuberance is in place, but actual performance is lacking. Poor execution can kill your enthusiasm in a hurry. This chapter addresses the mysterious slips between the cup and the lips. The first portion tackles the background factors that silently affect an organization's capacity for execution. It will also provide suggestions for enhancing the power you gain from these factors. The second portion is brimming with applicable tactics to elicit better execution. Specifically, you'll learn about the 5 hidden powers of people selection, how camaraderie translates into effort, how to keep the fires of passion ablaze, the power of accountability, the 5 ingredients of a compelling goal, the balancing act of delegation, and how to follow up well. Them's good people. It all starts with the people you have, along with the expectations for their performance. Sometimes a title or membership within an organization is worn as a badge of honor. Words like president and secretary have a bit of built-in expectation of what the job requires. The force of expectation is strong because it links back into one of the fundamental human desires, looking good. You can harness the dual force of expectation and wanting to look good by making your organization a bit more selective. While the expectation principle is often applied only to officers, you can unleash this force upon every member of your organization. If your organization could afford to be smaller, incorporate a selection process. Your process can be anything from a simple one-page application to an elaborate 3-stage interview, depending on your needs. Having such a mechanism in place provides you with several benefits. Screening. When you have an official means of screening your members, you get the luxury of separating the wheat from the chaff. The old saying goes, you can't fire a volunteer. This saying may be true, but you sure can stop someone from becoming a volunteer in the first place. Self-fulfilling prophecies. Selected members feel the expectation to perform from several places, and one of them is you. When you choose a member, you feel a personal ownership stake in his performance. You're biased to believe in his capabilities, so you'll be less prone to write him off and more prone to demand excellence. You will naturally interact and communicate that you believe in the person. People respond to that. If the other elements are in place, you will rarely be proven wrong. The elite factor. Groucho Marx once said, I'd never want to be part of a club that would have me as a member. Similarly, the impressive students at your school may not feel inclined to join an organization that lets in everybody. Just knowing that your organization is selective makes the motivated, achievement-driven students yearn to take on the challenge. I bet I can get in, they say. As a result, your selection process itself can attract some of the highest quality individuals. The fraternity effect. Being chosen from a pool of people makes one feel special. Selectees feel as though they are desired and that people appreciate them. The selectee wants to prove the selector is right because they are now part of the family. Enduring the process itself also adds value. Having gone through the ordeal, they feel like committing more of themselves to the organization. Note, this is by no means a recommendation for hazing. That behavior can in fact destroy an organization. Do make sure that whatever processes you have in place are respectful and keep the dignity of the people in place and are in no way harmful. OPP. Are you down with OPP? You know me. OPP stands for Other People Pressure. Selected members hold a powerful realization that they occupy a position which others did not attain. If that individual is not pulling his or her own weight, it becomes shameful. Real people were disappointed when they didn't get into the organization. Yet this person occupies a spot and is not contributing. Cruel, unfair world. Whether it's present in the conscious or the subconscious mind, people know that they are consuming a precious resource, a spot within your group. Every laggard with an ounce of conscience will feel guilt for depriving someone who has more passion from being in that group. Guilt can then turn into effort. So if at all applicable, make your candidates apply. That being said, choose your criteria for selection. Take some good time to talk through and decide what you desire in a candidate. Some widely applicable criteria include friendly enthusiasm and demeanor, a willingness to commit lots of time to the organization, ingenuity and creativity, an impressive track record for producing results in organizations. Have fun and continually refine the process. I love these guys. Do all you can to incorporate a sense of camaraderie and friendship among your members. The human connection makes each commitment more real and personal. Friendships provide a human face to a sterile organization. An organization as an entity alone is as bland and abstract as a gargantuan corporation. Human interactions bring them to life. By extension, it's much harder to let down Fred, Mike, and Susie than it is to let down the student government. When people know that real humans are counting on them and will be flustered by a failure, the consistency effect, remember buy-in, can operate at full force. Somehow, letting down an abstract organization just doesn't register as high on the guilt-o-meter. In order to turn members of your organization into real people whose opinions matter, make sure you don't neglect the fun stuff. Here are a few suggestions to breathe humanity into that favorite sterile entity of yours. Celebrate birthdays. Know names of people, places, and things that are important to your members. Road trips, pizza, or other assorted grub. Conferences, plus hotel parties. Invitations at the meeting and email list for parties thrown by members of the organization. Facebook group, icebreaker activities and games, a bar or restaurant or library or coffee crawl, t-shirts, competitions against other organizations, and seasonal fun activities such as snowball or leaf fights, checking out fireworks, etc. I'm sorry, I forgot your name. One thing that can kill camaraderie is when everyone thinks they ought to know each other's name. However, due to their own forgetfulness or asynchronous joining of the organization, the individual does not know the name after all. A quick way to remedy such fright is to play the I'm sorry, I forgot your name game. This activity is a quick mingler that you can use at a key opportunity when you think the I'm faking that I know your name and I'm scared you'll find me out phenomenon is occurring. The game is simple. Everyone stands up and says, regardless of whether or not they know another person's name, I'm sorry, I forgot your name. The parties then shake hands, share their names with each other, and move on. The concept is that each person doesn't really know whether or not the other party has forgotten the name, thus making it safe territory to finally get it nailed down. The amount of energy and fun liberated from this simple game may surprise you. If you make a little yearbook or get a Facebook group, that can provide a permanent resource to reduce this anxiety. Where's the love? To ensure that individuals continually keep rolling through their tasks, make sure they experience appreciation and celebration. You'd be surprised at the power of a small thank you note or other gesture. Most humans who have received a touching communication could tell you the tale like it was just yesterday. In fact, right now, I can recall a time in high school theater when I played Tartuffe in the play Tartuffe. It was an amazing experience, and I had planned on it being the capstone of my theatrical career. The next play the school had planned was Anne Frank. But being depressed by the tale, I didn't think I was going to participate in that one. But on performance night, each of the cast members received a thank you note from our director, Mr. Williams. It was a heartfelt note that expressed how he appreciated the very aspects of my performance that I worked hardest on. After receiving the note, I decided to go ahead and do another play after all. You never know who is on the fringes of the organization, just waiting to make their exit. A well-timed note can keep them around and motivate them to do more. It's well worth the time and money that you invest in thank you notes. You can get a lovely 10-pack of thank you notes for $3 at Walmart. 30 cents for undying loyalty? That's a no-brainer in the student leadership game. Such an action may seem mushy, but it really does make the difference. A simple 3 or 4 sentences works wonders. If you didn't take the time to try thanking during the strength chapter, don't pass it up this time. Also, when the group as a whole has performed well, celebration is in order. Psychologists report that celebration is crucial to refresh people and keep them from burnout. If you think that your team is hardcore and doesn't need to mess with that soft stuff, stop. Ceaseless labor will result in waning passion. All work and no play make Jack a dull boy. It also makes Jack quit. Find a way to party, cut loose, and pat yourselves on the collective back for a job well done. It can be spontaneous or pre-planned. Either way, it will make them want to deliver another celebration. Now, on to materials that will create results now. Bringing accountability to bear. You'd be surprised by how many people are motivated solely by not looking bad. Vanity is one reason why sending out minutes recapping member commitments makes such a difference. You will want to take it one step further by ensuring that you have an overarching culture of accountability present. There are many small ways to facilitate such a culture, but first, a warning about a deadly tendency, the downward spiral. Creating a culture of accountability is inherently risky. When you hold other people 100% responsible for doing what they said they're going to do, you automatically invite them to do the same for you. Such an invitation can lead to some embarrassing moments of failure. But it is inherently more noble and effective to be truthful about your performance relative to commitments. Unfortunately, 100% accountability is the exception rather than the rule for most organizations. Usually, people realize that they've fallen short of an objective. They feel lousy about it and hope that maybe nobody else will notice. As such, when this individual notices that another member may have fallen short on a commitment, he remains quiet about that failure. After all, to call out another on a failure when you yourself have failed would be hypocritical. The result can be a quick, dangerous downward spiral. The progression is summarized by the following steps. 1. People know what they should be doing, but aren't doing it. 2. Other people know that others aren't doing what they are supposed to be doing. 3. In turn, they assume that there's not much pressure to do what they said they were going to do. 4. All are quiet because they fear that they will be called out on their own personal failure. 5. Nothing happens. Do whatever you can to prevent this deadly endgame from becoming a reality. Be honest about your shortcomings and demand excellence from others, even when it feels like you're stepping out on a limb. Encourage your fellow executive members and general members to do the same, and you've come a long way to creating a culture of accountability. Once you're comfortable with accountability, make it work for you. When you've assigned something, always ask for the result at the due date. If you didn't set a firm date, we'll address that problem a little later. Don't shy away from asking publicly either. Feel free to wield the carrot and the stick subtly. When someone reports that something was finished, make a joyful noise of sorts, or say excellent, or great, or super, and rub your hands together. Let your eyes widen. Make sure that your pleasure is apparent and your thanking is thorough. Similarly, when someone brings a failure, hem and haw for a moment. It's okay if that person squirms. You don't have to be extreme and yell, "Your performance is unacceptable!" Perhaps an, "Okay, so when do you plan on having that done?" is sufficient, and that person will plenty feel red in the face for that alone. Don't put on a show or be manipulative, but be honest and diplomatic. If you're passionate about your organization and its performance, then you have a legitimate emotional stake in the performance of your membership. No need to bottle up those feelings. Keep it real so you can support and build that powerful culture of accountability. Your indications of delight or displeasure need not be public. If someone failed to show up or deliver, contact them personally. Be diplomatic and plan your communication in advance. There exists a cornucopia of different hues of intensity and disappointment. Choose the appropriate one for your recipient. Here's a little sample of the scale from personally sad to absolutely enraged. "We had a great time last night and people were asking about you. Alex, we missed you. I was disappointed that I didn't get the chance to chat with you. I thought, that doesn't seem like Bob, so I was wondering what's up. I may be mistaken, but I thought we agreed that you'd have that finished by last week. You signed up to work the event, yet your name was not checked on the list. We were expecting you last night and did not see you. Your absence is unacceptable. Your lack of integrity sickens me." That last one's a joke. Launching a personal assault on a person's character usually will not generate the result you desire. Setting compelling goals. Perhaps one reason your goals aren't being met is because they were poorly set in the first place. You need to set goals that humans can really internalize and move toward. While that may sound pretty simple and obvious, few people take the time to ensure that the goals they set optimally entice people to achieve them. The age-old acronym to guide the creation of compelling goals is SMART: specific, measurable, action-oriented, realistic, and timed. Make sure that every objective that you delegate has these factors in place. Specific. Vagueness and ambiguity are the enemies here. You need to clearly delineate the exact outcome you wish to see. A goal's realization must be fully distinguishable from its failure. How will you know that the goal has been achieved? Be definitive about what is to emerge. Don't micromanage, but make sure that the goal is specific enough so there's no question of what you're after. Comparative words like better or more or stronger don't make it clear exactly what is to happen, so spell it out. Measurable. Numbers are perhaps the ultimate destroyers of vagueness and ambiguity. When there's a number associated with the goal, then people immediately have a better understanding of the scope. Call some people is a lot different than call seven people. Action-oriented. You cannot always predict the outcome or result from a series of actions. As such, it can be difficult to hold people 100% accountable to the outcome. Unpredictable stuff happens, and it's not always fair to chastise members for not producing a given result because of that. However, you can always hold people accountable for a specific action. Did he take the action that he said he would take, or not? This question can be answered irrespective of external circumstances. In our example, making the call is an action, whereas the response from the person called is the result or outcome. Realistic. If the goal is ridiculously out of reach, no one, including the delegatee, will honestly expect to achieve it. That being said, don't sell yourself short. You can indeed achieve greatness, but members will rarely commit 20 hours of their finals week to a challenging goal. One of the best ways to uncover what's realistic from members is to just ask how much they think they can produce. Timed. If there's no clear deadline or time frame associated with the goal, then too many things will be relegated to later or next week. Setting a final date prevents deadly procrastination. It also completes the package in order to make victory and failure readily apparent. When someone knows when they are supposed to deliver something and they don't, they have that sinking feeling. They call it guilt. You could call it pressure to reach the goal. The SMART goal system makes each objective easier to understand and digest. As a result, it becomes easier to utilize the power of accountability. To kick it up a notch, turn the goals into a game with prizes. Perhaps everyone who meets her goal could receive a small cash reward, a privileged spot, or some other benefit. Delegating well. Delegating is the art of connecting people to your organization's mission by giving them a chunk of responsibility for completing. There are three key questions you'll need to answer about delegating. When to delegate, what to delegate, and how to delegate. When to delegate. The first thing to remember about delegation is to do it. Many leaders get so wrapped up in what they are doing that they alienate their members who want to get a piece of the action. The members may feel they're not trusted if you don't let them handle anything important. You may need to take some deep breaths and calm yourself in order to let go of something. Take the time to relax and let go. If you never share responsibility, the organization's leadership is weaker once you're gone. On the other hand, there are particular items that you are uniquely apt to do. If something falls squarely within your strengths and not in anyone else's, it may be foolish not to perform it. Ideally, you'll be able to detach yourself enough to allow others to shine. If you're really attached to the particular details of a task, then you should probably not delegate it. The saying goes, if you want something done right, you gotta do it yourself. A better perspective is probably, if you want something done your way, then you need to do it yourself. What to delegate. Once you've decided to hand off responsibility for a piece of a project, you'll want to refine what you're asking. Make sure that the chunk you're giving away is defined enough that you can clearly communicate what the goal is. Provide a complete overview of the goal with the whole power of SMART. Describe the goal in rich terminology that appeals to the person's personal preference. How the goal relates to the mission of the organization. If the goal doesn't relate, then it should not be a goal. Making the connection clear makes the delegatee feel like he's a part of something bigger than himself. Why you've selected this person. You've chosen this person for a good reason. Maybe she has special expertise in that area, or maybe she is just a reliable soul. Make sure you communicate that. Such communication can go a long way because the delegatee will have a strong desire to prove you right. The value of completion to other members. Once again, take a look at the human side. Invariably, the task you present will impact other people. make that apparent. How to delegate. As a leader, you will always be walking the fine line between micromanagement and abandonment. You need to determine and deliver the appropriate amount of guidance, and everybody prefers to work in a different way. Some people love conceiving a project and coordinating the whole thing from beginning to end. Others get frustrated when you ask them to bite off such an autonomous chunk. They say, like, what do you want me to do? What do I do next? Okay, done. Now what? Next? The key is to recognize where such a person falls on the continuum and work with them appropriately. Few things are as vexing as being given ownership of a project and then being micromanaged, except perhaps yearning for task-oriented guidance and not getting any whatsoever. The worst thing you can do is give someone the impression that he has complete ownership over a product, only to later demand it in a very particular way. I can recall a time at a work internship when I had been entrusted with creating a flyer to promote an upcoming party for the company's customers. I found this task a refreshing break from the typical audit paperwork that I was working on. However, I was in for a rude awakening. I had to fax the item to the boss several times. She critiqued each element from the color of the letters to the sizing of the graphics. Ultimately, we went through 8 revisions of this one-page flyer until she was satisfied. Needless to say, I was extremely frustrated. Don't do this to your student leaders. If it's crucial that something appear in a particular form, then you probably shouldn't have delegated it in the first place. The simplest way to strike the balance is to just ask how the person would prefer to work. They will answer honestly and appreciate your inquiry. Following up well. Often, if you don't follow up, it won't get done. When you decide to check in, try to do so in a systematic or periodic way, as opposed to only calling when you think that someone has screwed up or is behind schedule. It's fine to check in, and you should summon the courage to challenge suboptimal performance. However, if you only check in when you're suspicious, then that individual will naturally associate a phone call from you as a "you screwed up" kind of communication. In the future, this individual might avoid your calls or become wholly disillusioned. Unfortunately, however, you will be unable to follow up if you lack the means to contact them. A powerful but often overlooked step is gathering the contact information from everyone in your organization. Indeed, it should be one of the first things you do. Get it all. Email, home phone, cell phone, college address, home address, Twitter, Facebook, smoke signal, routing path, everything. The more ways you're able to connect with that person, the more capacity you have to inspire. Use these tools to check in and follow up with progress. Also remember that communication is a two-way street. Make your information public knowledge and strive to be as accessible as possible so people can report their progress or ask questions. Don't be shy about climbing up the communication ladder to ensure that people are executing. If your email doesn't receive a response, try a Facebook message. If that doesn't work, try a phone call. If your call doesn't work, show up at their door. When people know that you mean business, they often kick it into high gear. Often leaders who are disappointed with performance get stuck just whining over emails to large groups of people. Like, come on guys, let's get it in gear. Hopefully you remember from buy-in that such communication will not work. Don't do it. One of the greatest tools available to keep follow-up going is a good spreadsheet. If you've not used such software, you might not even realize what little information gaps you've got hiding. Keep careful track of your key information in some form of software, whether it's Excel or Numbers or Calc or a Google Doc. Put all of your members in there with as much information as possible. Their contact information, their Myers-Briggs type, assigned tasks, deadlines, observations, etc. You'll find that you have a much better picture of what's going on with your people. Recap. Institute a selection process to set a tone of real expectation. Remember that you're a collection of human students. Facilitate warmth and humanity in your organization. Craft your goals that connect to your mission in a smart fashion and make it clear that you expect excellence. Delegate appropriately and artfully to keep your sanity. Keep information on your members well organized so you can allocate your energies to following up in the appropriate fashion. By using these techniques, you've been able to transform commitments into actions. With your organization humming along and performing so well, you are ready to show it off to the whole world. What follows is the procedure for moving from your organization into the great beyond via